When I get back, she'll be waiting for me. She said as much. I'll be a big success, and she'll be so impressed, she'll do whatever I want her to. Prodded by Farrar's implicit promises, Levinson had rushed through the laboratory work. Producing nanomachines that were not damaged by ultraviolet light was no great feat. The trick was to keep them contained so they couldn't get loose and start eating up everything in sight. It was after he'd accomplished that that Farrar had told him he must go out to the belt and personally supervise the experiment. "So here I am," he said to himself, shuddering inside the spacesuit. "It's so absolutely empty out here." Despite his cerebral knowledge that the asteroid belt was mostly empty space, he found the dark silence unsettling. "It's like being in a football stadium with only one seat occupied," he thought. "Like being all alone in an empty city." There were the stars, of course, but they just made Levinson feel spookier. There were millions of them, countless myriads of them, crowding the sky so much that the old friendly constellations he knew from Earth were blotted out, swamped in the multitudes. And they didn't twinkle. They just hung up there as if they were watching, solemn, unblinking eyes staring down at him. "We're ready to unseal the bugs," the voice of one of his technicians grated in his earphones, startling Levinson out of his thoughts. "They're not bugs," he replied automatically. "They're nanomachines." "Yeah, right. We're ready to open the jug." Levinson pulled himself slowly along the tether to its other end, anchored in the solid rock of a little asteroid. His two technicians floated above the rock, able to flit back and forth on the mini-jet thruster units attached to their backpacks. Levinson, a novice at extravehicular activities, kept himself firmly clipped to the tether. He carried the jug, a sealed bottle made of pure diamond, on the utility belt around the waist of his spacesuit. He planted his feet on the asteroid and, much to his consternation, immediately bounced off. In his earphones, he heard one of his techs snicker softly. "Newton's laws work even out here," he said, to cover his embarrassment. He approached the rock more slowly and, after two more tries, finally got his boots to stay on the surface. He could see the puffs of dust where he first landed still hanging in the asteroid's minuscule gravity. The technicians had marked concentric fluorescent circles across the surface of the rock, like a glowing bullseye. Cameras back in the ship would record how quickly the nanomachines spread from the release point, chewing up the rock as they went. Levinson went to the center of the circles, tugging on his tether, bobbing up and off the asteroid surface with each step he took. He heard no giggling from his technicians this time. "Probably they've turned their transmitters off," he thought. It was clumsy working in the spacesuit's gloves, even with the tiny servo motors on the back to help him flex the fingers. Finally, Levinson unsealed the bottle and placed it open end down on the exact center of the bullseye. Again, the light gravity worked against him. The bottle bobbed up from the surface as soon as he took his hand off it. Frowning, he pushed it down and held it for a moment, then carefully removed his hand. The bottle stayed put. Looking up, he saw that both his technicians were hovering well clear of the rock. "Scared of the nanomachines," Levinson thought. "Well, better to be safe than sorry." He grabbed the tether with both hands and hauled himself off the asteroid, then started his hand-over-hand return to the ship. The tether suddenly went slack, and for a fearful moment Levinson thought something had gone wrong. Then he saw that it was still fastened to the ship's airlock and remembered that the techs were supposed to set off an explosive charge that released the end of the tether attached to the asteroid. In the vacuum of space, he couldn't hear the pop of the explosive bolt. It took a surprisingly tough effort to turn around, but once he did, he saw the other end of the tether hanging limply in empty space. And the asteroid was vanishing. Levinson's eyes goggled at how fast the nanomachines were chewing up the asteroid, leaving a rising cloud of dust that grew so rapidly the solid rock itself was quickly obscured. "It's like piranhas eating up a chunk of meat," he thought, recalling videos he had seen of the voracious fish setting a South American stream aboil as they attacked their prey. "Start the spectrometer," Levinson called excitedly as he resumed tugging his way back to the ship. In less than a minute, he could see the sparkling dazzle of a laser beam playing over the expanding dust cloud. Puffing with exertion, he saw as he approached the airlock that its hatch was closed. His two assistants had jetted to the ship ahead of him, he realized. "What are you getting?" he asked into his helmet microphone. The technician running the spectrometer aboard the ship answered, "Iron, lead, platinum, silver. Pure elements or compounds?" Levinson demanded, watching the asteroid dissolve like a log being chewed up by a wood chipper. "Atomic species, mostly. Some compounds that look pretty weird, but most of it is pure atomic species." The weird stuff must be the nanos, Levinson thought. He had programmed them to shut down after 48 hours. At this rate, there wouldn't be anything left of the asteroid in 48 hours except a cloud of individual atoms. "Wow," he thought. "It works even better than I expected. Vicky's going to be impressed, all right."
Admiral Wanamaker's office. The spare, austere office was empty except for Wanamaker himself and Wilhelmina Tashkatchin, his intelligence officer. She was short, round, dark, and, according to the scuttlebutt that floated around the office, a pretty good amateur belly dancer. All Wanamaker knew for certain was that she had a fine, sharp mind, the kind that can analyze information and draw valid conclusions more quickly than anyone else on his staff. That was all he wanted to know about her. They sat on opposite sides of the conference table that extended from the admiral's desk. Like all of Wanamaker's officers, Tashkajian wore plain gray coveralls with her name and rank spelled out on a smart ship badge clipped to the flap of her breast pocket. Wanamaker himself wore the same uniform. He looked up from the report on the display screen built into the table's top. "They're testing nanomachines?" She nodded, her dark eyes somber. "Humphreys recruited the scientist that Pancho brought back here from Ceres. Snatched him right out from under our noses." Wanamaker grimaced. "She should have kept him on Astro's payroll. Too late for that, sir." "And they're already in test phase?" Another nod. "From the information we've gathered, they went through the laboratory phase very quickly, and then sent this Dr. Levinson and the crew of technicians out to the belt. Conclusion, they are testing nanomachines on an asteroid." "Does Pancho know this yet?" "She gets a copy of my reports automatically." "Any response from her?" "Not yet, sir. I just put out the report this morning. Not everyone reacts as fast as you." She smiled lightly, then added, "Sir." He allowed himself to smile back at her a little. "The real question," she said, "is whether HSS is developing nanomachines for processing ores out of the asteroids or as weapons." "Weapons?" Wanamaker's gray brows rose. "If they can chew up rocks, they can chew up spacecraft, buildings, even people." He sank back in a stiff metal chair. "Weapons," he muttered. "My God." "It's a possibility, isn't it?" she asked. "I suppose it is." Tashkajian waited a heartbeat, then said, "I've been thinking about your request for a diversion, sir." "Is this a change of subject?" "Not entirely, sir." Looking slightly puzzled, Wanamaker said, "Go ahead." "Suppose we attacked HSS's base at Vesta," she began. "Most of it's underground," said Wanamaker. "They're well dug in and well defended." "Yes, sir, I understand. But they have certain facilities on the surface of the asteroid. Communications antennas, launch pads, airlocks to the interior, even their defensive laser weapons. They're all up on the surface." "So?" "So we strew the surface with nanomachines that eat metals." Wanamaker's eyes flickered. She couldn't tell from his stony expression whether he was impressed or disgusted. She plunged on. "The nanomachines would destroy metal structures, even eat into the asteroid itself. It might not wipe out the base, but it would certainly disrupt their operations. It would be the diversion you've asked for." He was silent for several moments. Then he asked, "And how do you get a ship close enough to Vesta to accomplish this raid? They'd blast the ship into molecules before it got close enough to be dangerous to them." "I think I've got that figured out too, sir." He saw that she was deadly serious. She wouldn't bring this up unless she thought she had the entire scheme in hand, he realized.